I'm Jess Spenlove, a performance dietitian, coach, and speaker, and welcome to Stay at the Top, the podcast for ambitious high performers wanting to easily go from exhausted to energized with evidence-based hacks designed to deliver sustained success and enhanced longevity. I want you to harness the power of nutrition, sleep, mindset, and other high-performing behaviors to achieve your big goals now, while also considering future you as well. Now, let's get into today's episode. Welcome to another episode of Stay at the Top. This week, I am talking all things fasting, and it's maybe a little bit of a different conversation to what you might have listened to on other podcasts. Today, I'm sprinkling in a little bit of the science, but it's more of a real world conversation about what fasting is, who should use it, who shouldn't use it, and how I see it being used. Hint, it is an advanced tool that should be used by an advanced user who truly understands how to eat to optimize their energy, their performance, their health, their well-being, and their longevity. Today's episode was inspired by conversations I've been having with elite athletes who've been using fasting and probably shouldn't be. And it's also been inspired by a lot of different clients I've seen using fasting as, to be honest, a band-aid excuse for their poor lifestyle choices. It's a little bit of a spicy episode, but I think you'll find a lot of value in it because it's a conversation I haven't seen anyone having, and I wanted to go there. I also know that a lot of people listening to me are elite athletes, or they train like an athlete, or there's someone that might be using fasting as a tool when it may or may not be suitable. So as always, I hope you get a lot of value out of today's episode. Now, how I see intermittent fasting getting spoken about is that it's just the greatest thing in the world. This is the research. It's the answer to longevity. It's great for our microbiome. It's great for manipulating energy intake. There's some cardiometabolic benefits, which I agree on all of those points. But what I want to talk about today is who it is not necessarily for, and for the people using it, how they need to look at it. So this conversation has been inspired from a few different conversations or observations that I've either had or made. One of them is an elite athlete that I've started working with the last few months. And this is someone who trains 5 days a week. That is their career. They are very active. They started using intermittent fasting because they've heard the science and the benefits, and they thought this could be something really good for my performance, for my longevity, and can also be a really good way to manipulate weight. But diving deep on some of the goals and some of the parameters that he's got, it became very clear that the fasting was actually inhibiting his performance. Similarly, with other clients that I work with who are corporates, executive founders, and they've got amazing performance goals. They might be looking to run marathons or do Ironmans, or they're just training like an athlete, which means they train once or twice a day. And similarly, for these types of people, intermittent fasting or fasting just may not actually be supportive of what they're doing. Now, I'm not saying blanket rule, never fast, but I'm just saying I want to have a conversation today for the types of clients that I work with, the types of people that I know are out there that exist, on how they can use the tools, should they use the tools, and what are the things they need to consider. Now, the other side of the coin in terms of what inspired me to record this conversation is I'm also seeing a lot of people subscribing to intermittent fasting or undertaking time-restricted eating as a way to justify or put a band-aid on their poor lifestyle choices. And I am here to call that out. Intermittent fasting is not going to solve all of your problems if you don't learn how to eat, how to leverage the power of nutrition, and how to use nutrition as one of your main pillars for optimal health, vitality, well-being, and longevity. Simply eating between a certain time frame will not override the ultra-processed foods, the alcohol, the refined sugars, the high saturated fat, and the lack of quality nutrients, antioxidants, vitamins, minerals, all of the quality nutrition. So today's conversation is based on both sides of that conversation. Now, I thought a really good place to start would be to define intermittent fasting and also time-restricted eating. Now, intermittent fasting first became popular with either the 5-2 diet, you know, eat normal 5 days and then have a really low energy intake for 2 days. Then very close to that came the idea of the 16-8, which is we fast for 16 hours and we eat within 8 hours. Similarly, a lot of the messaging around both of these styles of eating were really around eat normal, just keep eating what you're eating, but either on those 2 days a week, really restrict your intake and eat, you know, 500 or 800 calories a day or whatever it might be. And similarly on the 16-8, it was really restrict your eating to an 8-hour window and you're all good. Now, I'm not debating whether or not there is benefit to fasting under the right circumstances, but what I have a bit of a bee in my bonnet on is the messaging around just eat whatever, which is just absolutely not the case. Fundamental nutrition principles and pillars for eating as many whole foods as possible, eating high fiber, nutrient-rich, antioxidant-rich, minimal processing is priority number one. The quality of what you eat is fundamental to every aspect of your health and your well-being, both now and in the future. Now, I'm not debating in some circumstances that intermittent fasting and time-restricted eating can be really beneficial. There's been some really great research by Dr. John Hawley, who I respect and I admire so much, where over 7 weeks, 131 overweight women were divided into 4 different intervention groups. Now, this research was particularly looking at the effects of time-restricted eating and high-intensity interval training. The design of the study included for 7 weeks, one group did time-restricted eating, so they consumed all of their nutrients within a 10-hour window of their choosing, which is really important. It's not about having to do it at a certain time. It's matching it to their circadian rhythm. Another group did high-intensity interval training 3 times a week for 35 minutes. The fourth group did both together, the time-restricted eating, so they ate within that 10-hour window and they did the 3 sessions a week. And then the fourth group acted as a control group. So there was 4 different groups and they wanted to assess was time-restricted eating, high-intensity interval training, or the combination of the two more effective. And they were looking at a number of metabolic parameters, things like visceral fat, blood glucose levels, and overall weight. The researchers took various measures of cardiometabolic health before and after the trial. And what they found was that the time-restricted eating and the high-intensity interval training group improved nighttime glucose levels, their long-term glycemic control, which is measured by your HbA1c, they reduced visceral fat, and they increased their cardiorespiratory fitness the most. So that's a really important, exciting piece of research to see that the combination of those two things together. We're not saying work out every day. We're not saying go on these elaborate water fasts. We're simply saying by limiting your intake of food for the 10 hours, high intensity interval training for 35 minutes 3 times a week, you're going to have profound improvements in those parameters for overweight women. Fantastic. The other area I'm really interested in when it comes to time-restricted eating is the impact that this can have on the microbiome, on your gut health. The other really interesting area when it comes to time-restricted eating is some of the benefits that are being seen in the gut health space. So there's research coming out showing that time-restricted eating, so if we're eating over a 10 or a 12-hour window, this positively impacts our gut microbiota composition. So from that side of the conversation, there is definitely some benefits to simply tightening up the hours that we eat. It doesn't, again, have to be one meal a day or 3-day water fasts and all of this stuff which is out there. It's simply saying if we eat between a certain window and we have space, we allow our digestive system the ability to rest, that has a positive impact on our microbiome. And I think that's a really important, helpful piece of information there. However, again, I really want to highlight that if we are not fundamentally eating to optimize our health and our microbiome, if we're not looking to increase our plant diversity, increase our fiber, eat more whole grains, more fruits, more vegetables, more lentils, more legumes, more nuts and seeds, herbs and spices, really good quality lean protein, and reduce our overall consumption of ultra-processed foods, we really need to consider then, are we doing everything that we can? And while yes, there is some benefit to doing the time-restricted eating, which might be a first step, might be a nice entry point for people, I'm really here to drive home the point that, I'm sorry, if you don't address your nutrition and what you are actually eating and putting in your mouth every single day, multiple times per day, please don't kid yourself and think that, all good, I'm just intermittent fasting and I'm time restricted eating, so I'm all good here. Yes, it might give you some benefits, but it is not the solution that you are after. It is potentially the band-aid. And that's why for me, when I talk about these types of things with the types of clients that I work with, I really see it as an advanced tool. And I'm sorry, but most times you don't earn the right to use that advanced tool until you learn how to fundamentally eat. And learning how to fundamentally eat means you know how to eat for optimal energy. So elevated energy levels and more consistent energy levels. Absolutely fundamental to you living your best life and having the best quality of life. Understanding how to eat to manage your appetite. I had a conversation yesterday with a client. When you learn how to eat consistently with the types of foods and the combination of foods that you need, you should never be getting to a meal or snack absolutely starving. We don't want you to be full and forcing yourself, but you shouldn't be ravenous and just ready to devour anything in sight. What we want is that you're getting to the meal, you feel ready to eat, but you are not an 8, 9, 10 out of 10 starving. Because when you get to that point, you overeat, you eat fast, and then often you're then, once you've had the meal, you don't feel satisfied, and sooner or later you then have cravings, sweets, chocolates, cakes, whatever it might be. So when you learn how to fundamentally eat, it addresses your appetite and your cravings as well. They are eradicated. I've said it once and I'll say it again. I don't believe people are sweet tooths. When someone's like, I'm just a sweet tooth, I need chocolate after dinner every night, I'm like, I know for fact, without even knowing what you're eating, that you are not balancing your protein intake across the day. You're probably not getting enough fiber. You're probably dehydrated and you're probably not eating consistently. I have seen time and time and time again, people who swear that they are sweet tooths, athletes, CEOs, busy professionals, everyone, you name it. I do not believe there is such thing as a sweet tooth. It is simply you are not meeting your nutritional requirements and you haven't learned how to eat to manage that. Now, I'm not saying to never eat those foods. Those foods are delicious, but there is a difference between like desiring and, oh my goodness, I absolutely need to have this and this is all I can think about, to, oh, wouldn't it be nice just to have this, and having it and being satisfied and stopping there. They are two very different things. So you need to learn to eat for that. So energy, appetite, cravings, and this is performance in day-to-day life. Like if you're an athlete or you're active, you want to be training hard, you want to be improving, you want to be recovering. When we're thinking about cognitively each day, we want to feel focused. We want to have good productivity. We want to mentally feel refreshed and not fatigued. These are all signs and factors that nutrition influences. So when you've learned how to eat to manage and optimize them, then I see fasting having a place for certain people. But what I really want to call out here is who I don't think fasting is appropriate for. I don't think that conversation is had. This conversation happens from a lens of if you've got a medical background, if you're on medication, you know, seek professional advice to make sure that it's suitable for you. It's also from a lens of if there is a history of an eating disorder or a disordered eating. But The angle that it does not come from is if you are an elite athlete or if you are someone training like an athlete and they're training at a high intensity most days, maybe intermittent fasting isn't the right thing for you to be doing all of the time. The other place, and look, I haven't seen this happen too much, is in someone with a really high energy budget that is still developing. So definitely like from an adolescent perspective, but similarly from this whole elite athlete perspective, like I'm going to use a male athlete here as an example, like up until around 22 years of age, they still are in some level of development. So anyone with that really high energy budget, intermittent fasting is just not something that I would be recommending. And I've definitely seen it and I've definitely heard it with some of my like high level junior athletes, like that 18, 19, 20, and they've heard about intermittent fasting and they might not be good at breakfast and they've just decided in their head that that's what they're doing. But again, diving deep, it's like this isn't actually supporting your performance. If anything, it's actually undermining it. In instances where I may use it with an athlete is someone who is what would be considered like an older athlete. So depending on the sport, and look, in this example, I am referring to elite athletes. So there have been, say, like early to mid 30s, I'm thinking some AFL and NRL players I've worked with, and we've worked out on different days, on very strategic, very specific days, that that might be something that they use like once a week. But in most instances, it's not necessarily about intermittent fasting. It might be more about pushing breakfast back, which would still be somewhat of a time-restricted eating, but it's not this mindset of I'm skipping breakfast, I'm not having breakfast. Because what we know for someone who is very active, like an elite athlete or someone who trains like an athlete, that for 24 to 48 hours after an intense workout, your ability to recover, your ability to, it's called muscle protein synthesis, which is the pathway for gaining and maintaining lean mass, is elevated. So if you've had a really hard workout the morning before or the night before, and then the next day you're fasting, you're missing that window of opportunity to maximize that recovery there. And what I often find is that most people are doing it because one, they've heard it and they think that it's good for them and their performance, or two, they're using it to manipulate their energy intake and potentially drop some body fat. Which when you dive into that conversation, it's like, okay, well, if that's what you're doing, let's find a way, let's find a solution that gives you that outcome, but that isn't jeopardizing your recovery. Do you want your leaders or employees to have more energy, better focus, improved well-being, and enhanced performance in 2024? Well, the key lies in each person learning to master their daily non-negotiable behaviors like nutrition and sleep, and also learning to embed high-performing behaviors into their lives with ease. The good news is I offer a variety of workshops, sessions, and consultancy services drawing from a decade of experience working across multiple high-performance arenas. My approach, refined from supporting over 1,000 of the country's best athletes and special forces soldiers, combines cutting-edge nutrition, human performance, and well-being strategies that are simply unmatched. If you run a team or a business and you think I can help, let's connect on LinkedIn or feel free to schedule a 15-minute discovery call to talk about your objectives using the link in the show notes. And now referring to this AFL player who was one of the inspirations for today's conversation, talking to him, short term, he felt it was good. You know, he was managing his weight. He was feeling quite good. But after doing this for a few weeks or a few months, particularly in season when games are happening, he was then just having this week or two where he would just feel totally depleted, really low energy. And it was these little windows of recovery, which he wasn't optimizing because he was fasting, that were jeopardizing that. So I know there are a lot of people here who are athletes or who want to eat like an athlete or who train like an athlete. So I really wanted to have this conversation today. Might be a little bit of a spicier one because I am passionate about it. And This is not a I'm against fasting. I am pro fasting for the right circumstances and the right people, but I really do see it as, have you earned the right to use this tool? Are you an advanced user who has passed through the beginner status of learning how to eat to just optimize your quality of life for now and for the future? Have you then dialed in things in even further? And are we now looking at this tool? Now, look, this isn't to say that, you know, for some of the people in the study that it can't be used. Obviously, we're starting to see research where in certain populations, so for example, this overweight women, which in the Dr. John Hawley study, which saw benefits from time-restricted eating and also doing a few high-intensity interval training sessions a week. Fantastic. Great. We can use this as a tool, but we still need to learn how to eat. We need to be looking at, are we preparing the majority of our meals? Are we eating the majority of whole foods? As I've said before, it is that quality piece, and we cannot cheat quality. Quality of the food that you are eating is the number one priority for every single person. The next point I want to make is the types of clients that I do regularly use fasting in some capacity with. And these tend to be more of my corporate clients. So they might be whether they're an executive, whether they're a leader, whether they're a founder, whether they're just a corporate professional who regularly finds that they're eating out, they are entertaining clients, having meetings, and there is that less of control over what they are having. Now, I do caveat that because I do believe no matter what the circumstances are, you can always make the best choice. So that's the first point I want to make there. But in saying that, we know that when we eat out, that it is going to be different to the types of foods that we would cook and prepare for ourselves at home. So the types of clients that I like to use these kind of strategies with are clients who have grasped fundamentally how to eat, how to integrate it into their life, how to enjoy it, how for it not to feel like punishment. I really do feel like there is this heavy misconception that eating well is boring and bland and not enjoyable. Absolutely not the case. If you're doing that, you just haven't learned how to balance your meals, eat with all the elements, flavor it with the right foods. You haven't learned to enjoy food. The other thing is if you're eating out often or you're eating like takeaway, and obviously they're adding a lot more things to what we add at home, it is changing the flavor profile. So even just from a taste bud perspective, when we start to remove these types of foods, not forever, but we reduce them, when we start to eat more whole foods, when we start to take responsibility of our food, then yes, the flavor profile might change, but we do adapt to that. So that's the other point, but it should not be punishment. So it should not be bland. It shouldn't be punishment. So the types of clients are those who've learned that they're looking to manipulate their intake. They might be looking for some longevity benefits, but they're the types of clients that have the foundations in place. The other type of client is, again, someone who's still grasped all of that, but they are that busy professional, busy corporate, meetings, eating out, entertaining clients, traveling domestically or internationally for work. And there are things that are just a little bit more out of their control. It's still important that we assess what their life looks like when they train, when they can use it, because when it can be challenging to intermittent fast is particularly those people that exercise in the morning at a high intensity and then they want to wait and delay their meal. What you will find is there is a two-pronged kind of consequence of one, not maximizing your recovery, and two, there can then often be that flow-on effect later in the day where their energy is crashing, their appetite's a little bit all over the place, they might be craving sugar, and that's often a consequence of what's happened in the morning. So it can be hard for someone who trains in the morning to push back that meal. It may not be suitable. In most instances, if it's a high intensity, it's not. If it's a low intensity workout, a walk, Pilates, yoga, something like that, then it's fine. You haven't exerted yourself at that level. But when we're working at a higher intensity, whether we're doing like a cardio or a strength training workout, we want to be getting that nutrition in within the hour. So in that instance, you know, if we are looking to implement something like this, it might be more time restricted eating. It might be looking at when they have their first meal, when they have their last meal, and can we get it within that 10 to 12 hour window? So I hope today's episode has been helpful. I hope it's been insightful. I hope it's given you an insight into how these kinds of tools can be used. And I hope it's made you reflect, is this something I'm doing? Should I actually be doing it? Is this actually helping me? And look, if you are someone who is having those questions, please feel free to reach out. If you're wanting to work with someone in that capacity to see if this is a strategy that you should be using. And I think the main thing here is wanting to better yourself and wanting to maximize your energy, maximize your performance, maximizing your longevity is amazing. What my aim for today was to have a bit of a real conversation and just make you aware of where this type of thing fits in. And it's a little bit of an accountability session, I guess, to be honest, because as I said, I'm either seeing not all the time, but I've seen it enough to want to cover it in an entire episode. I've either seen really motivated, high-level, high-performing individuals like elite athletes trying to use these strategies when it's not actually supportive to what they are trying to achieve, even though in the short term they may think it is. The other situation that I am seeing it is that it is an excuse or a band-aid for poor lifestyle choices, which if you are a high performer or you want to be a high performer or you just want to live your best life now and into the future, then let's not make excuses. Let's not cut corners. I know we're busy. I know we've got a lot of things happening, but it's still not an excuse to not learn how to leverage one of the most important and powerful levers that you have total control over every single day, which is what you eat. Thank you for joining me for today's episode. If you've liked it, I would love for you to share it with a friend or someone who is interested in this space. If you haven't yet hit subscribe, please do that. It really helps the show and it also helps make sure that you don't miss an episode when it lands. For those of you who have left ratings and reviews, I'm so grateful. And if you haven't, if you could take 30 seconds to quickly do that on Apple or Spotify, it really means so much. It helps the podcast reach more people. And to be honest, I just love reading them. I do a lot of solo episodes. So to hear and know that people are listening, that they're finding benefit and it's adding value to their life just makes me feel really great about doing it as well. So on that note, I'll be back again next week for the last episode of season one. I can't believe we're at 20 episodes already. I will be taking a short break for about a month and then I'll be back with brand new content. But until then, friends, I hope you all keep staying at the top. Team, thank you for tuning in to another episode filled with actionable insights to not only help you reach the top, but to sustainably stay there. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to let people know by sharing the episode around and rating and reviewing the podcast on the platform that you listen to. Your support truly makes a difference. Until next time, keep staying at the top.